This is Colourful Radio.
Now, Reverend Al Sharpton is in the house. From the National Action Network, so is Simon Woolley, Director of Operation Black Vote. Gentlemen, thank you very much for sparing time. How are you doing?
A pleasure.
Great. Glad to be with you.
Glad that you could come in. Let me start off with this, Reverend Al. I've seen you speak before, both in the flesh, 10 years ago, and on television too. And when you said at one point in your remarks last night, there's nothing so painful for a pastor to do than preside and preach the funeral of an irrelevant Negro. I sat there agog and I wondered how that was going to go down. And people tittered nervously, then they cheered. And you went on to say, most people shouldn't even have a funeral. They should go straight from the morgue into the cemetery. I thought, my, this is very, very brutal. Reverend, you sound uncompromising. You sound angry. You sound sick and tired of people who are doing nothing.
I am very sick and tired of it. I think at this point in history, where we've seen so much struggle, and now we have such an opportunity, a African-American president in the United States, two African-American governors, the amount of people here in Great Britain, the United Kingdom, at a time that the politics is so divided, which gives you such an opportunity, there's no excuses for us not to be on, as we say, our best game. And I am trying to really shock people into the reality of that the ball is in our court. And what I fear is that we get down the road 20 years and people say, you had all of these things and you didn't use them, so quit complaining.
Yeah, you said at one point Martin Luther King, Fannie Lou Hamer, Nelson Mandela, Gandhi did not have Facebook, internet, email, or Twitter.
Had nothing. And they were able to move mountains. They changed the whole country. We have all of these ways of communicating with each other and can't pull ourselves together to do anything. It's a shame.
What do you think is at the heart of that? What do you think is at the core of that?
I think a lot of it is that we have become individualistic and we've become internal. We do our own thing. And a lot of it is we're afraid. We think that if we step out, that we're going to lose something that we don't have, because if we had power, we wouldn't be afraid. And I think that we have really seduced ourselves into that if I don't do anything, then maybe they won't see me, maybe they won't bother me, when of course the contrary is true.
You said at one point that you didn't really understand the concept, I think, of a black conservative. Can you tell us what you meant by that?
What I meant by that is the idea of conservatism is to conserve the present status quo. Well, then why would you, if you have no interest, influence, or power, want to conserve something that is not in your interest? What are you conserving? And I think that they're those that pretend that they believe that. But in their heart of hearts, I ask these guys, when you really go to sleep at night, just between us, you really can't believe that stuff. Because you're conserving what? You have nothing. You have no interest in it, and it does not develop and enhance and empower your own.
At one point you said in your remarks, conservatives often say to you, you know, people with degrees and resumes, well, you know, the civil rights didn't get me my resume. And you said civil rights got your resume considered.
Right.
It meant people would actually look at your resume instead of putting it in the bin. Is there a lot of resistance to this message? People really feel that we're post-racial in the States and possibly here because Obama is in the White House, because we've got more black and Asian MPs, and we'll talk to Simon Woolley, the man who brought you over, in just a moment here, because I know he was on fire last night as well.
No, I think there is some resistance, a lot of it by the mainstream media, which is why this station is so important here in the UK, because they try to impose on us, well, we're past that, and past what? If we still have inequality, we're not past that. Barack Obama's success is amazing, but it was as a result of the struggle. It was not an alternative to the struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us are mistaking the fruit on a tree from the seed and the root that grew the fruit.
Yeah.
We look at the leaves rather than the root. The leaves come and go. The root of the tree is what goes forever. The root is that there must be a struggle that sustains itself until we are fair and equal.
Simon, amid and after the euphoria last night at the Friends Meeting House, I was getting texts from friends and people were calling me who were there watching Reverend Al speak. And they were saying, where is our Reverend Al? Is there any man or woman who could mobilize this number of people into this venue on a rainy Thursday night? What do you think? Is there anybody? And I looked at you, Simon, and I thought to myself, Simon, is there anybody?
Well, I mean, two things there. That some months before that, we had the same amount of people on a political rally. So, yes, they've come to see, they've come to listen to the great Reverend Al Sharpton. But they've equally come to be, politically empowered. And that's the critical message. Because, you know, Al's message, Operation Black Vote's message is, it's our time. We can be the agents for change. And our role, if you like, is just to inspire. Are we looking for a UK Barack Obama or Reverend Al Sharpton? Well, they're already there.
Yeah.
What our role is to give them a platform to be seen, to be heard, to be making that difference. So, you know, we must stop being too self-critical. Mm-hmm. The talent's in abundance. There's a deluge of it. Look at yourself here. Look what you're doing. Look what you're doing here. You know, this is a real professional outfit. The only challenge that you have is going to the banks to get the finance to be like Capital Radio.
Yeah.
This is what we need to recognize. When we come together like we did last night, we can put plans in. It's not just about Westminster. It's not just about the White House or Capitol Hill. You know, it's about Wall Street. It's about Canary Wharf in the city where our energy and skills need to be seen.
And Simon, 10 years ago, you brought Reverend Al over and I was there and exactly the same venue. It was a rousing response to what he had to say. Here we are in 2010, an election looming. Did you feel that the response was different? Did you feel that you, in the 10 years since Reverend Al was last here making a speech of this nature, that we've moved, we've progressed, that we're more receptive?
Well, we talked about this, you know, over the last few days, about what is the difference between then and now.
Right.
And you have to recognize, we have to recognize this, we've made substantive change. We've doubled the number of MPs. We have now High Court judges, 6 ministers, 2 cabinet ministers within the judicial system. Things are changing faster than we can keep pace with in terms of our success. The critical quantum leap for me, Henry, and for our listeners, is how does the community politically serve notice on the political elite, the establishment, that is that collective force now that's going to take us forward. That's really the last piece in the jigsaw puzzle. When that piece is there, Henry, we'll have our black prime minister, we'll have our chair of the city banks. It's not far away. What Reverend Al Sharpton has done, what Obama has done, is really planted that last piece of the jigsaw puzzle in terms of the self-belief.
Aha.
That's the voice of Simon Woolley from Operation Black Vote. Pleased to say we've got Reverend Al Sharpton in the studio with us. We've got just under 20 minutes now, so I want to remind you how to get in touch. If you want to text us, you can do so by texting us on 80818. That's 80818. Start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, and then your message. Or, of course, you can do it the old school way. Go to the website, colourfulradio.com, and click on email me.
Right, you are, Juju. Now, question from Justin. How are you doing, Justin, this Friday morning? And he says this. It is to Simon Woolley and Reverend Al Sharpton. The Christian People's Party are organising black Pentecostal churches on a right-wing conservative platform. This is a particular problem in Barking and Dagenham, just the east of London, where splitting the black vote can lead to the British National Party far-right organisation from being the official opposition to control of the local authority. What is your message to them, Reverend Al, and your strategy, Simon, on dealing with this? Reverend Al, first of all,
my message to them is that we must be very careful. The Christian right needs to be confronted by what I say, the right Christians.
Uh-huh.
And that is that to represent a dogma and an imposed view of religion is, to me, ungodly. God gives people the right to choice. So what the Christian right has done in the States and in the UK is take the dogma that we may believe in and try to make it the legal status in society. I do not think that we have the right to do that, because once you impose your will and beliefs on others, they can do it on you. God himself gives you the right to choose. So then who are we in the church to tell people we must make their choices for them? We must resist that.
Did you meet any right-wing Pentecostal church leaders on your tour?
Well, you know, we had, hours after I landed, we immediately went to The Voice, the black newspaper, and I met with 25 leading ministers. Now, none of them told me they were right-wing, but I met with 25 leading ministers, and we had a very frank and blunt discussion that I think went very well.
It is. I mean, there's two aspects to this, too. We're encouraged that the churches, both right and left, are registering their constituency, their flocks, to vote. Because, you know, if we get a 95, 98% voter registration, we beat the BNP resoundedly. And of course, this is the democracy and people will choose. We have to sit down with the church leaders and say, what is our objectives here? We need to be strategic. It's not enough being brilliant. We've also got to be smart, politically smart. And this is a game which could backfire if we work in silos to allow, and you know what I called them yesterday, the wretched right, the wretched rabbit. Far right, and we know what they want to do to our people.
Yes.
They've told us that they want to sink us in the sea. So we need to be strategic if we're not to allow this hatred to take root.
Another email from Justin is prolific this morning. I think you're inspired, my young brother. And he says this, Midase, Sasha, Bonsu and Juju. That's Chi, which means thank you. Midase. Really insightful and interesting program. But he talks about President Obama this way. Obama has failed politically, though. He's suffered as a result and seems to be belatedly picking up on the economic front. Obama hasn't deceived anyone. I think he hasn't been bold enough, especially on choosing healthcare policy and communicating the need for radical reform, giving the rabid right too much sway to shape the terms of the debate. That's one point. Then he says this. However, when FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, put through radical social reforms, it wasn't because he was marginally bolder than Obama. It was also because the might of the socialists and communists led industrial unions, to paraphrase an apocryphal phrase, which went and made him do it. Obama, the cultural impact is amazing, and I don't think it can be understood for some years to come. Then he demands we play some more hip-hop like Common, Talib Kweli and Mos Def, but that's for another time. Anyway, in terms of the Obama points,
I think Justin is right. I think that the climate must be there to make Obama to make him do it, in the sense of having the climate that pushes him forward. Mm-hmm. Any president, any prime minister has to operate in the political and cultural climate and environment that they function in. And I think it's now up to us. He went after the bankers yesterday.
And he said, I'm ready to have that fight. He sounded angrier. He sounded more determined, more focused than I've seen for a while.
Yeah, he did. And defeats do that to you sometimes.
Yeah, pain.
Sometimes the best boxers are when they're knocked down and they get up off the mat, then it brings the champion out of you. And I think we must do that in terms of creating that climate, both in the States and here, that would force the change that we voted for.
I'm looking at the front page of The Sun today, and there's a picture of Kiki, the boy that's kind of becoming the face of the Haiti, disaster.
Yes.
And they're talking here about the possibility of a charity record being done soon. But I know you've just returned from Haiti.
I'm going now.
All right.
And I've been working hand in lockstep with Wycliffe John. And mm-hmm. In fact, Wycliffe is going back tomorrow. And when I get back, I'm going back tonight. He and I have talked every day he was there. The aid was not getting to the people. He's going back to do a check, then I'm coming in behind him. Our concern is that a lot of the aid stayed on the tarmac at Port-au-Prince and didn't get out to the people, and it started to cause people to continue to die in medical problems. We're seeing some evidence that is changing, but we've got to be there to keep the pressure on. My fear, and that's why I met under the auspices of Simon Woolley and Operation Black Vote with the faith leaders here, the ministers, is that when the cameras leave, and already you're seeing Haiti go from page one in most papers to page 10, what then happens? Because you've got to rebuild this whole country. The infrastructure is gone. The government is gone. The whole government buildings were knocked down. What happens a month from now, 2 months from now, when the press is gone? We've got to have permanent institutional commitment, and I think the churches and the faith community, last night a group of them and I met with the Archbishop of Canterbury, we need to challenge the religious community to go and make a long-term investment, because it's the right and moral thing to do. That's one of the strategic things that I think Simon is right, that we could even challenge the Christian right on. And that is, if you're so much concerned about human life, then let's see what your concerns will be demonstrated in Haiti. My problem with a lot of the Christian right is they seem to be extremely concerned about the fetus until after it's born.
Right. Here's a text from Dimples in Harrow. Hey, guys, loving the show. Great guests this morning. Loving Reverend Al Sharpton. Get him in for longer next time. Simon, just thinking about the tour that you've taken Reverend Sharpton on, who have you taken him to meet? We know that he's met some Pentecostal leaders and the Archbishop of Canterbury. We know the Archbishop Rowan Williams is probably soft left, and some of those Pentecostalists, okay, they didn't out themselves as right-wingers, but they might be today now that the Reverend is going. But what else? What else was the objective?
It's been nonstop. You know, we picked him up at Heathrow some 3 days ago and hit the ground running.
Yeah.
Went over to South London, to Lewisham, to see Doreen Lawrence and visit the students at the Stephen Lawrence Centre.
You called her our Rosa Parks yesterday, I think. That's right, didn't you?
That's the truth, because, you know, it's almost simultaneously, almost single-handedly, she has changed British legislation, been a beacon. For our people. And then, as the Reverend mentioned, the meeting with the ministers was really heartwarming.
Yes.
Because right there they pledged three things. First, they said that they wanted to, be part of the Black Manifesto, to have a rally during the election campaign for 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And also to become more politicized in terms of their right, their freedom to worship. Three big things, three big pledges from them. The rally last night, you were there.
Yes.
You were there for that. School visits. And we also met, three cabinet ministers. The first one was Douglas Alexander, the International Development Minister. And we sat around, convened around the table, actually to coordinate from the US and the UK, the church's response, the community's response. They often focus on aid agencies. And what the Reverend said to the cabinet minister, you're missing the trick here.
Yes.
There's a lot of good people that can do great things. And, you know, from that meeting, 2 days later, they came back and said, we want a meeting this Monday, turning around on a sixpence. And so, you know, the Reverend's presence in London has really galvanized a lot of positive action.
It certainly has. Another email, this time from Olu Alake, who is the president of London's chapter of the 100 Black Men of London.
Oh.
And he says this: what lessons from Obama's candidacy should we be taking in the UK, especially for established, or in brackets, older generation black leadership in nurturing, identifying and promoting young black political leadership? To Simon, what initiatives are OBV undertaking or supporting to ensure this happens, and how can our people get involved? So, Reverend, you again.
One of the things that we learned from the Obama race is that we've got to appeal to our young people, and we've got to use the new technology. She talked about going to the website old school. A lot of the old school people don't even know about the website, and she's already advanced past that. Obama mastered technology. He mastered new ways of communicating, and he was not afraid to step out and create new models. You cannot use 1960s models in 2010. Mm-hmm. And we had this same tension in the States. I was born in the northern urban New York as Obama did his work in Chicago, so we understood each other more. We're like 6 or 7 years apart. But the generation ahead of me, Jesse and them, were southern segregation born. I don't know about the back of the bus. I think what I'm saying is, what you can learn here is you must give way to the younger generation, those of the middle age, and then those that are younger in their 20s and 30s, and bring them into the process. Too many times the older leaders are trying to protect their status rather than expand the movement. Doesn't replace you, it expands you. Joshua didn't replace Moses, he continued Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we must not see this as a competition between old and young, but a continuity between old and young.
That's right. And we feel privileged at Operation Black Vote to be part of that, Agents for Change. You know, registering to vote within our community. You know, some 10% of all the black candidates standing in the next general election are from our schemes.
Yes.
Schemes of which we've nurtured young men.
Shadowing schemes of magistrates and
that's
MPs,
right.
Etc.
That's right. The Reverend was at the celebration of the magic threshold of 50 black magistrates now dispensing justice up and down the country. Now, these civic volunteers will dispense justice for more than 20 years. They're 20 years younger than the average magistrate.
But they will dispense justice that one would expect to be what justice is. Is it going to be blind? Is it going to be colorblind? What kind of justice?
Well, of course it's colorblind. But, you know, they come with a history. They come with an experience that isn't there if they're not there. So when a young black man or woman walks through the courts and they see a black woman dispensing justice, they say to their hearts, I'm convinced now justice will be equitably dispensed. That's a big change, not just for the individual in the dock or on the bench, but the court system and the community in general. There's a long way to go, but Operation Black Vote is dedicated to nurturing talent. We know it's there. We've got to bust down the doors if need be and bring that talent through.
I think one of the testimonies that I can say that I've seen with OBV here is when I first came 18 years ago to lead the march on Roland Adams.
That's right.
They wanted to deport me.
Yes, I think the headline was the most odious man in America.
Most odious like man in America.
Yep.
The Bronx Beast has arrived, even though I was from Brooklyn. and they wanted to run me out of the country. The other night, Simon had me sitting at the House of Parliaments next to the Minister of Justice. Now, access is progress, but now that you have the access, it doesn't mean anything if we don't get concrete things done. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think he's committed to doing. And I think that that's where we are. We fought to get in, and you're getting in places, magistrates, MPs, etc. Now they have to deliver, because if all we do is change the color of the same situation, then we haven't really done what we're supposed to do.
You were talking just then about young people, and one thing we've got to touch on is a Michael Jackson memorial. For a lot of people, the young, it probably was the first time they really experienced the power of Reverend Al Sharpton at his best, because it was a pretty amazing speech. It gave me goose pimples and a lot of people that I spoke to. What has been the reaction worldwide to that speech?
You know, it's funny. I just spoke at a school, and it's a middle school, secondary school. And so I guess the average kid's 12, 13.
That's right.
When I got out the car, they said, that's Al Sharpton who preached Michael Jackson's funeral. and that strikes me. And because I had a personal relationship with Michael, I knew Michael. We kind of knew each other most of our lives. We were only, mm-hmm. Michael was 50. I'm 55. He was 50 when he died. And I was talking from personal feelings. I never thought about 2 or 3 billion people were watching around the world. But as I travel, it has really been very much an introduction to a whole, not only just new generation, but people that normally wouldn't watch politics.
That's right.
But that saw me at that funeral, that are totally into music, but that saw me at that funeral. Now, if I can just bring them over to being a little more conscious, then I feel better.
Okay, well, thank you both much indeed for coming in. Simon, I know you're going to have to chaperone the Reverend over to the airport. You're going back to the States, Reverend, and then to Haiti, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, well,
but I shall return.
As Muhammad Ali once said, I shall return.
As I told you, and when I saw you the DNC.
You did, and quite rightly, from the Invesco Centre, Mile High City, here to London, England.
You make me feel so good.
Okay. Colourful Radio.